welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Coming up on today's program, we begin to highlight stories from a new class of young producers in Dayton Youth Radio. And in WISO Curious, we'll tackle the answer to a question from one of our listeners. Up first, let's start with some state news. And then later in the program, we've got a nice set of music coming up from the American Landscape from their recent appearance on Kaleidoscope with Juliet Frumholt. Several weeks ago, Toledo residents had the chance to vote on an unusual, some might even say radical, proposal, whether to give the fourth largest lake in the U.S. its own Bill of Rights. From Ohio Public Radio member station WCPN, Adrian Ma explains how the idea came about and why some in Ohio's business and agriculture communities are worried.
For Marky Miller, August 2nd, 2014 started off like any other day.
I remember waking up and took a shower, made coffee, turned on the news.
Thanks for staying with us on this extended edition on your Saturday morning.
Not knowing why right away, just seeing all these warning signs.
A state of emergency is in effect for areas in and around Toledo where 400,000 people are being warned not to drink the water.
Don't touch it, don't bathe in it, don't brush your teeth, don't give your pets water.
Officials said giant floating sheets of algae in Lake Erie had produced dangerously high levels of microcystin, a toxin that can cause rashes, vomiting, and even liver damage. Within hours, bottled water was in short supply.
Officials are also urging people not to boil the water because that will only increase the level of toxins.
Luckily, I didn't drink the coffee.
The Toledo water crisis, as it's now called, lasted for 3 days. To avoid a repeat, the city's in the process of a $500 million upgrade to its water treatment plant. And yet, Miller says she worries because summertime algal blooms continue. Scientists who study the problem say these blooms are fed largely by phosphorus from agricultural runoff. Think fertilizer from farms and manure from animal feedlots.
What's in my water? I don't know if I can trust this now.
After the crisis, Miller joined a community group called Toledoans for Safe Water, which teamed up with a Pennsylvania nonprofit, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, to get the Lake Erie Bill of Rights on Tuesday's ballot. If passed, it would give the lake the right to exist and flourish, and give Toledoans the right to sue alleged polluters from, quote, any jurisdiction. The idea is to fight pollution through deterrence.
I don't think that a particular city or a particular group of people asserting that they get to be the Lorax for this particular place really accomplishes that.
Jonathan Adler teaches environmental law at Case Western Reserve University. He says key parts of the proposal conflict with federal and state law, so it's probably unenforceable. But similar rights of nature laws have passed in cities like Pittsburgh and Santa Monica, so opponents are taking it seriously. Earlier this month, a PAC called Toledo Jobs and Growth Coalition ran this radio ad.
What do these groups put in their Bill of Rights? The right to hurt local farmers. The right to hurt small businesses.
Another group campaigning against it is the Ohio Farm Bureau. They argue it's counterproductive to threaten farmers and other businesses with lawsuits. Michael Boyert is on the Farm Bureau's Board of Trustees, and he says, as someone who makes a living off the land, he gets the concern about Lake Erie.
It's a very valuable part of everybody's lifestyle.
But as he shows me around his small cattle farm in Medina, he says,
it's a hard nut for us to take when we have a group that wants to tell us we're not doing our job.
Boyert says farmers in recent years are taking more steps to reduce runoff, like cutting down on fertilizer, planting cover crops, and storing animal waste. But he says it'll take time to see results. Meanwhile, though, the Ohio EPA says those voluntary measures aren't reducing phosphorus pollution fast enough. Recent summers have seen algal blooms more severe than the one that overwhelmed Toledo's water supply in 2014. That's why, on a recent evening, Marky Miller is standing on a highway overpass with other members of Toledoans for Safe Water. They're setting up a sign with big block letters for drivers to see.
Oh, and what is this going to say when it's done?
It'll say, vote yes, Lake Erie Bill of Rights.
Now, if the ordinance does pass and it's challenged in court, that could mean the city of Toledo has to defend it. The city law department, by the way, did not respond to a request for comment for the story. But the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, which helped draft the Bill of Rights, says if the city is sued, they'll offer legal support. In the end, Miller knows the Bill of Rights may not survive. But, kind of like their sign, she hopes it'll send a message. For Ohio Public Radio, I'm Adrian Ma.
In case you're wondering, Toledo residents said yes to the Lake Erie Bill of Rights. And just this past week, Governor Mike DeWine said he wants to spend nearly $1 billion on water quality projects to clean up Lake Erie and protect other lakes and rivers throughout the state. In a report from the Associated Press, they say the money would come out of this year's new state budget, which DeWine revealed on Friday, and all of it would be set aside into a fund for water-related initiatives over the next decade. It's not known how the money would be spent yet, but DeWine promoted the idea of creating wetlands to filter pollutants and paying farmers to use new methods designed to reduce phosphorus-heavy fertilizer runoff. Ohio, Michigan, Ontario, and Indiana, which doesn't border the lake but gives rise to rivers that feed it, have pledged to reach a 40% reduction in the amount of phosphorus entering the lake by 2025. Several environmentalist groups have said Ohio and other states have not done enough to make a dent in the algae blooms. The Ohio Farm Bureau Federation, the state's largest agriculture organization, praised the governor's proposal, saying it shows an understanding of the complexities that come with the issue. In other state news, some Ohio legislators have been trying for years to add sexual orientation and gender identity or expression into the state's anti-discrimination law. The bill, known as the Ohio Fairness Act, would make those additions a protected class in employment, housing, and other public accommodations. State House correspondent Andy Chow filed this report.
Right now, a person in Ohio could be fired from their job, kicked out of their apartment, or refused service based on their sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression.
We actually do receive those calls. We have those stories.
Elena Jokum with Equality Ohio is among the advocates defending the rights of LGBTQ people in Ohio. If the Ohio Fairness Act passes, those scenarios could no longer legally happen.
It's important because LGBTQ Ohioans are still left out of having any kind of protections.
That's Democratic Senator Nikki Antonio, who has reintroduced the legislation in the form of Senate Bill 11. This is the seventh time a bill like this has been introduced in the past 11 years. Antonio says the goal is to create a statewide anti-discrimination policy. Right after he was inaugurated in January, Governor Mike DeWine extended an executive order signed just before John Kasich left the governor's office. This created protections for state workers. Some cities and municipalities have their own local ordinances protecting their residents. But if an LGBTQ person is fired in a city without these local laws,
there's really no recourse. There's really nothing that they can do.
Jokum with Equality Ohio says it's not fair to have a patchwork of protections.
We should have a system where everyone has protection no matter where they live or work or engage in their daily life in Ohio.
Jokum says Ohio is one of 28 states without this anti-discrimination language. She says the state is slowly falling behind.
This is a nonpartisan issue. It is a human rights and a civil rights issue and a business issue for our economy.
But there are people who oppose the bill, saying it'll actually create more problems for others, especially when it comes to religious objections. Aaron Baer with the conservative organization Citizens for Community Values lists off his own scenarios. He cites a faith-based women's homeless shelter in Anchorage, Alaska, locked in a lawsuit for barring a transgender woman, and the high-profile case in Colorado when a baker refused to make a cake for a same-sex couple. Baer says laws like the Ohio Fairness Act leave the door open to conflicts.
They're so vague that they create a lot of problems in communities. They create a lot of problems for ministries, for businesses, for individuals, for schools. And so we would rather just say, hey, this isn't needed.
Baer adds that he believes employment, housing, and services discrimination against LGBTQ people is not a widespread problem.
At the end of the day, we don't have stories of people being fired because they're gay, at least not on a massive level. Most of the times when you hear these stories, there's some other factor going on, but I don't know of a single business owner in any part of Ohio that is actively looking to not hire somebody because they're gay or not serve somebody because they're gay. Every business owner I know wants to get as many customers in the door as possible.
But Jokum says this is a prevalent issue in Ohio. However, she says people may not feel comfortable speaking out because of the lack of pro-LGBTQ policies. That being said, Jokum and Senator Antonio do not believe this bill will lead to a groundswell of litigation in Ohio.
Now there's a line in the sand for people not to be discriminated against. It's a bar. It raises the bar on our behavior. It doesn't, you know, open the floodgates to complaints.
The bill is getting a big boost from the business community. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce, along with hundreds of companies, are calling on lawmakers to pass the bill. They say it makes the state more attractive to new companies looking to move and to a younger workforce. Andy Chow at the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau.
I'm Jerry Kenney. You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Thanks so much for joining us this Sunday morning. Questions, questions, questions. They all need answered. Here's one question we passed on to one of our Community Voices producer, Renee Wild. In this week's Why So Curious, Jeff Wilson of Vandalia told us he'd seen a photo in the Wright Brothers Museum of a curious geological formation called the Pinnacles, and he wanted to know more about this Dayton landmark.
In the 1800s, there was an unusual geological formation along the Miami River, just south of downtown. Known as the Pinnacles, or Devil's Backbone, the towering formations were a popular recreation spot for locals.
The Pinnacles themselves seems to be an area where there's been erosion and ridges and sort of pyramidal-type structures.
Dr. Michael Sandy is a geology professor at the University of Dayton. He first learned about the Pinnacles through a book by August Firstie.
A preeminent geologist in the Dayton area. And in 1915, he published a book describing the geology of Dayton, and there is a photograph of the Pinnacles.
The black and white photo shows a tall column of earth towering above a small silhouette of a man dressed in 18th century clothes.
On the northern meander, the river is going up and eroding a river cliff into the glacial sediments that were deposited here probably a little bit under 20,000 years ago. The sediment, it's not hard rock, it's geologically young, it's soft, it's erodible, and you can get all kinds of interesting erosional landforms and features. And that's really what the Pinnacles is. The Devil's Backbone is this sort of ridge that is above the river, kind of extending through the Pinnacles and maybe a little bit further to the east as well.
These formations were located in moraine, which is named after this geological area.
Yes, a moraine is a glacial deposit. As ice melts, it can leave significant deposits of sand, gravel, clay.
In the 1850s, a railroad went in along the base of this area.
But I think that really was the death knell of the Pinnacles. I was out there this morning looking at it. I mean, it's tree-covered, it's vegetated. As that slope lost its angle, its very steep angle, it probably just kind of covered over with vegetation.
Although the Pinnacles no longer exist physically, their role in aviation keeps this local landmark alive.
I'm Nancy Horlacher, and I am the local history librarian at the Dayton Metro Library.
Nancy is a charter member of the Wright Brothers Research Committee and a former curator at the Caroline Historical Park.
And the Wright Brothers exhibit was part of what I curated there. And
so remember Dr. Firstie, who was mentioned earlier?
Dr. Firstie, who wrote the book Geology of the Vicinity of Dayton, which was a highly acclaimed book. He was also a national and international noted geologist and paleontologist. And he taught for 38 years at Steele High School. And Orville took classes in science and was taught by Dr. Firstie. That may be one reason they went to the Pinnacles, to observe the birds that were flying there.
In the summer of 1899, the Wrights developed their wing-warping theory while watching the birds at Pinnacle Hill, which in turn gave birth to modern aviation.
The brothers needed to solve one piece of the puzzle for flight. They had already solved pitch and yaw. Pitch is the way the airplane would go up and down. Yaw would be turning right to left. But It took them observing for 2 years the birds, especially the buzzards at the pinnacles that were flying in the drafts.
The buzzards' wingtips would go up and down, separate from the wing being all one piece, which is how they bank and turn.
So that was the crucial piece to flight.
So even though the pinnacles are no longer around, they live on in history. Every time you see a plane flying in the sky. For Why So Curious, I'm Community Voices reporter Renee Wild.
Why So Curious is our series where you ask the questions and Why So producers answer them on the air. Tell us what you're curious about by visiting our website at wyso.org. You're listening to Why So Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. So you may have heard me describe over the years during our membership drives how this station, WYSO, is a multifaceted jewel of programming, whether it be music, news, or otherwise. Every Wednesday night, the shine of that jewel spotlights great local musicians and their music. Recently, Kaleidoscope with Juliet Fromholt featured the talents of Springfield's The American Landscape. The band talked about writing and recording their forthcoming album, upcoming shows, and more. You can hear that interview on the Kaleidoscope page at WYSO.org. But they also played for us live. We've got a couple of tunes for you right now. Check it out.
Caroline, it ain't easy. Trying to live something new. Standing far from the borderline while sitting on the shelf. I got friends that are strong.
once you've seen it, gotta have it, but it's laced with cyanide.
Springfield's The American Landscape, performing on Kaleidoscope with Juliet Fromholt just a few weeks ago. Catch the full interview on the Kaleidoscope page at WISO.org. You can catch the band at Mother Stewart's in Springfield on March 22nd and at the Yellow Cab in downtown Dayton on April 12th. And learn more about them on their Facebook page under The American Landscape Band. Well, today on Dayton Youth Radio, we have the first story from a new class at Stivers School for the Arts. It's from a teenager who's a poet and performance artist. This student has a lot to say, and she wants you to listen.
Ignorance in this generation is not spread across everyone. My name is Tone Riddick, and I'm a 16-year-old from Long Island, New York. I feel like everything I go through, I learned something. It makes me love myself even more. Especially when I know how aware I am. When I know how special I am. How rare I am. Let me tell you a little more about myself. Like how I moved to Dayton, Ohio over 3 years ago. And I've learned more about life living here than I had my 12 years living in the NY. I learned that I'm beautiful and strong all at once. That I'm not someone you forget about. Learning this helped me attain this new passion for poetry and a love for performing. I had idolized the works of Maya Angelou and James Baldwin. Still, I rise to the hardships and temptations of today's society and the fear of the beauty in the color of my skin. To be a Negro in this country and to be relatively conscious is to be in a rage almost all the time. I love my skin. I love being beautiful. I love being black, but not everybody else loves it. It's about me having to live a certain way for everyone else. So, I wrote a piece that mirrors my emotions and conveys the ideas and concerns of many. It goes a little something like this. Let me tell y'all a story about how my people are seen through a different scope. How we pay taxes but still somehow wasn't good enough to vote. How you can take our money but you can still cut our throat. How our black men don't want to do wrong but there's a lock on the right door. Causing limitations in the world to explore how our generation chooses to follow figures that had no father figures. The ones that pull the trigger and think that cock and his pistol gonna make them bigger. How we rest on cotton covers and sheets but don't wink an ounce of sleep. Living life like a magnet, adding and subtracting, make ends meet. He was a systematic bull who was strong and upbeat, angled in this world of unforgiving. He knew his future while aware of our history. 400 years we've been dying because breaking free is what we trying. Life's been a trip from the start, that's why you come out your mama crying. Where it ends, it begins again, but if the tables turn, then the rights of those would all depend. Is it in vain that we all bleed the same blood? In all actuality, the difference is skin deep, lost in translation in the company we keep, because I'm treated as if the slave is still in me. You learn the lesson of how a black man juggles his two lives. One, the life in which he's cattle and the rest of the world he lives to battle, because black hasn't slept in 400 years, always dipping their toe in gravel, too. The man that hides pain behind his smile, of a black man forgetting his royal blood is tribal. The rest of my life is spent learning the hate of the world and how it's our job to uncover that man is my father, my uncle, my brother. This generation is based upon putting their heads in their phones and posting to social media and making new dances every other day. It's a defense mechanism. It's what they use to escape the real world. Be aware and rise up. It's important for us, especially as black people, being the fact that we have been oppressed and we are oppressed and we've been oppressed for so long, it's important that we know the situation we are in, because if we're not aware of it, there's nothing we can do to change it. I know. I'm aware. I'm aware of the limitations that have been put upon me. I'm aware that I can get out of it, and that's what you're afraid of. And I want you to be afraid. Not afraid of walking outside like how I am. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. I want you to be aware that we will rise up. Everyone else that has been oppressed throughout the years, we will rise up. I'm not someone you forget about. You can't help but listen to what I have to say. For Dayton Youth Radio, at Stuyvesant School for the Arts, this is Tone Riddick.
That was Black Girl, Manifesto, written and produced by Tone Riddick, a sophomore at Stuyvesant School for the Arts. Special thanks to Leslie Rogers and Eva Max Studis at Stivers. For Dayton Youth Radio, this is Basim Blunt.
Support for Dayton Youth Radio comes from the Virginia W. Kettering Foundation and the Ohio Arts Council. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the fourth week of early spring. It's the second week of the cabbage white butterfly moon, and it's the final week of the sun in Pisces. This week of the year, as early spring deepens and the sun moves from Pisces towards warming Aries, I keep looking for the colors and sounds that mark the path away from winter. When I look back at some of my notes, I see that tulips form one of the borders of time that appear between yellow daffodils and the gold of forsythia. After all, without such borders and markers, there is no time or spring at all. And markers like tulips are like themes in songs that weave great music. So like this week in 1983, I found the first tulips, and right then I found the first bluebells flowering in the park, and I saw my first green frog of the year. Now like this year in 1995, when I saw the first tulip, I saw the first cabbage white butterfly, and it was looking for cabbage in my garden. Peony leaves were unraveling from their 10-inch stalks, and crocuses were in bloom, and the first pollen was forming on the pussy willows. This week in 2007, when the first tulip bloomed, the first leaves came out on the raspberry bushes. And this week in 2016... when I found new red tulips in the garden, I saw that golden forsythia buds were starting to come undone. And Mary Sue sent a note saying she had seen a bright yellow goldfinch. And so tulips lead me through frogs and bluebells and butterflies and crocuses and pussy willows and finches. And pretty soon, I'll get to April. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the fifth week of early spring and the third week of the cabbage white butterfly moon. In the meantime, why not watch for the first tulips? Who knows where they'll take you?
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this edition of WYSO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO, giving voice to our community, our nation, and our world since 1958, thanks to generous listeners like you. I'm Jerry Kenney. We're back next Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Coming up next on WYSO, it's Vic McCunis with the Book Nook.